Defense Secretary Leon Panetta arrived in Baghdad early this morning to mark the end of the war in Iraq for the U.S.
This is an opportunity for Iraq to forge ahead on the path to security and prosperity. And we undertake this transition today, reminding Iraq that it has in the United States a committed friend and a committed partner.
With the lowering of the American flag there, the nearly 9-year U.S. war in that country has finally come to an end. Almost 4,500 American service members have been killed, but the casualties on the Iraqi side have been much greater. We don't actually have exact numbers. It's at least tens of thousands, probably more than 100,000, perhaps much more. Needless to say, a bittersweet experience for civilians in that country. And we wanted to talk this morning about the legacy of the Iraq War. And we're joined by Zainab Samir, a 27-year-old Iraqi woman who works as a university lecturer in Baghdad. And Zainab, I wonder what this day is like for you. I described it as bittersweet. How do you feel?
I think it's considered a happy day for me. Because after all, it is a withdrawal of occupiers. I'm optimistic on my side, so I feel that it will be better to take the responsibility by ourselves. If you want me to say that there are good points in this war or after the end of this war, the good points are so few considering the bad things that happened after this occupation, because everything was worse here in Iraq. There's nothing that's considered better from before. Actually, the one thing that is considered to be good here is just the freedom from Saddam Hussein regime. That's, I think, the first and the last good thing for this war and after the end of this war.
We're speaking with Zainab Samir, a university lecturer in Baghdad. And let me ask you, Zainab, there have been not just one general, but several military officials who have expressed concern about what may happen in Iraq when the United States leaves. As of when the last troop, American soldier, leaves Iraq, they're worried that there will be chaos, that groups, not merely al-Qaeda, but other groups will take advantage of the Americans' absence in order to carry out violent acts. Do you agree with that?
Well, actually, we have already living in chaos. So why we must depend on American? Why don't we depend on ourselves? So I think it's a kind of weakness if one of our governments says something like that. He must, in my opinion, he must be ashamed of saying such things, because we must depend on ourselves.
Let me ask you just one short question, Zainab Samir, before we go. Here in the United States, in American history books for our kids in school, this war is going to be called the War of Iraqi Freedom, Operation Iraqi Freedom. That's the name Americans give this war. What do you think Iraqis will call it?
I think occupation.
You think they'll call it the American occupation?
Yes, yeah, the American occupation. Because whether I like it or not, though I don't like it, but I must admit that it was a kind of occupation.
Well, if it was an occupation, it ends today. Zainab Samir, a 27-year-old, a university lecturer in Baghdad, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And with us now in studio, Ned Parker, the former Baghdad bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times, now a press fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, just returned Tuesday from a 2-week trip in Iraq, so you're probably tired. And you've been covering the war since 2003. Good morning.
Morning to you, Celeste.
Yeah, it may not feel like morning, but, you know, I wanted to start you with Zainab Samir's comment that Iraqis view this as the end of an American occupation. Do you think that's kind of a universal feeling there?
Yes, it is. It was an occupation. It was declared as such for the first year by Bremer. And for Iraqis, their country was dominated by the sight of U.S. security forces in the street who would go into their homes. At times, Americans were also seen as protectors, but they were always this foreign force and presence. Even when they were doing good, sometimes there were civilian casualties, people who died because, let's say, a U.S. soldier had a bomb blow up by his tank, and then the U.S. soldier sprayed fire and accidentally killed a young man. That happened to an Iraqi friend of mine. So, you know, there's no way to get around the fact that this was an occupation.
You're speaking of Paul Bremer, of course, who headed up the Coalition Provisional Authority for some time after the 2003 invasion. You know, she also said that everything in Iraq is worse except for the removal of Saddam Hussein. And that's hard to believe when you listen to the American generals and American officials talking about all the things that are better, that this was, you know, President Obama talked about this as a moment of success.
Yes, that's unfortunate. I mean, Iraq has been such a divisive war in our country, and the tendency is for, I guess, our political leaders and military leaders to paint this in the simple black and white of good and bad, and we don't want to say, or America doesn't want to say, that we have failed. You know, yes, America got rid of Saddam Hussein, and there are possibilities in Iraq of greater freedom, but there's been so much bad that came along with it. It's very difficult to see the good because there was so much violence, destruction, and even now, when you look at the government that's emerging in Iraq, there are authoritarian tendencies, a corrupt elite. That makes it such a complicated picture and one filled with so much sadness and real loss and sacrifice for Iraqis that cannot be understated.
Do you think that the reasons why we went in, the WMDs that we never found, do you think that's as important a discussion now as it was in 2003 and 2004?
For who? For Americans?
For Americans.
The WMD is, I mean, I think you would look at that almost like the that American comedy movie, The Hangover. You know, some people wake up after a crazy lost weekend and they say, my God, what is Mike Tyson's tiger doing in my hotel suite?
And it's
just
holy
this
cow.
Crazy moment that doesn't make sense.
And probably the filmmaking wasn't any better. But let me ask for you the same question I started with Zineb Samir of Iraq. Is this bittersweet? Is that the right word to use?
Bittersweet, perhaps for us, even more bitter for the Iraqis.
Ned's the former Baghdad bureau chief for the Los Angeles Times, now a press fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He just returned Tuesday from a two-week trip to Iraq. And Ned, you've covered the war since the beginning. So I want to ask you, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about the failure of U.S. officials, the failure of the American military, perhaps, to estimate what was needed for the war. Execution has obviously been endlessly analyzed. But I want to talk about the possible failure of the American media, which has also been debated. And I wonder what you take away as a reporter from our journalists' coverage, both of the wind-up to the war and as the war went on. Did we redeem ourselves?
That's a great question, Celeste. I think, obviously, the coverage of the Iraq issue before the war, the rush to war by the American media, it represents a huge institutional failure on the part of the media in terms of its obligation to the American public. And we saw reporters doing what reporters often do, all of us, including myself. You have sources, you cultivate sources, they give you information, you're supposed to check it, balance it out. But perhaps in that period of time, it was such an extraordinary time. It was after 9/11, America felt under attack. The media acted the way the public did, scared, and there were exceptions such as the McClatchy, the Knight Ridder chain, in terms of being dubious of the intelligence.
Very skeptical, yeah.
Yeah, but for the most part, the media went along. I do think that and there is a lesson there, I think, for all reporters, all media institutions in the future going forward about maintaining your skepticism about what's in your conversations with people in government, and also just it's important for the media to remain committed to providing both sides in a story, doing the due diligence and presenting it. But I do think that the coverage of the war by the media, and by that, it's what I know best, which is the print media and you know, my colleagues from that were in Iraq from the different networks, you know, from 2003 till today. I think there was a real commitment to trying to tell the story of Iraq as it happened. You know, at the beginning, I think reporters came under a lot of pressure from the U.S. military and from probably here in America, from the White House administration about reporting negative stories. So I do think reporters did do their job in Iraq. And telling what happened, not perfectly. That's just the nature of work and being in such a treacherous environment. But I think there was an effort to redeem I suppose.
Ned Parker has covered the Iraq War since the beginning as the former Baghdad bureau chief of the Los Angeles Times, now at the Council on Foreign Relations. So let me ask you about the future of Iraq. Obviously, we've gotten comments from American generals who are worried that this country will descend into chaos. So you heard an Iraqi woman just a moment ago talking about how she's optimistic, although the government is weak. What do you think? Is this a country that will remain united, where the path to diplomacy is shaky but sure?
In terms of the country's internal politics,
yeah.
That's what struck me so much in my recent trip to Iraq. I was in Iraq this summer from May till early August. And at that time, I saw many worrying trends in Iraq. The politics of the country were becoming polarized again, very sectarian, reminiscent of 2003, 2004, and 2005, and the buildup to civil war. And I also saw a lot of alarming trends from the government, from the prime minister's office, of security forces being used in questionable raids where people were detained and then would disappear into special jails where their families and lawyers could not talk to them, pro-democracy protesters who were trying to have their own equivalent of an Arab Spring to criticize the corruption among the elite government officials and lack of transparency started to be attacked in May and June by plainclothes government agents and pro-Maliki supporters. While army looked on, these men would go around and beat people on one occasion. And I had been in Egypt in Tahrir Square in February and had, saw mobs there attacking pro-democracy protesters, and it was the same thing. So I saw all of that this summer, and when I came back, it was the same, if not worse. And Iraqis are in charge of their destiny. And America, I don't think in recent years has effectively used its clout and leverage to try to help promote this process of national reconciliation or the respect of civil liberties and freedom of speech, particularly, I think, since 2010, there was an effort of getting a government in place because there had been a deadlock in Iraq. And then, with the deadlines on troops leaving, there was an emphasis on just having kind of a stable figure in power that America could deal with at the expense of these important things like rule of law, freedom of speech. So all of that seems to be going, and that was the case when I went back.
Well, we've got like a minute and a half left, so let me ask you this very complicated question, which is Iraq 5 years from now, 10 years from now, stable, peaceful?
I wish I had a crystal ball. I sure hope so. I mean, I very much respect and Iraqis. I've spent a lot of time there, and I think everyone wants to see Iraq work out for the best, but we really don't know. There's so many different and worrying trends there. As I said, the politics have become far more sectarian. In the political class, there's very little trust between kind of the Shiite elite and the Sunnis. There's talk within different provinces of creating their own regions because the Sunni provinces no longer trust Baghdad, so they want to declare their own region. With what's happening in Syria, that could also polarize things. So it's so complicated, and that could lead to more unrest and authoritarian regime. Or perhaps Iraq will have its own Arab Spring that will lead to an accountable government and a process of national reconciliation.
Ned Parker, Edward R. Murrow, Press Fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, former Baghdad Bureau Chief at the Los Angeles Times, talking about the official end of the Iraq War today. Ned, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We want to get your reaction as well. You can give us a call at 878-MY-TAKE.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, the New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.